Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
There are just over 3 weeks left until Election Day, with all eyes on the North Carolina Senate race between Senator Kay Hagan and State House Speaker Tom Tillis. Hagan has held a slight lead in virtually every poll in the last few months, but her edge is within the margin of error. Here with the latest on the race and a look at how President Obama and Governor Pat McCrory may be affecting it is Jason Husser with the Elon University poll. Well, thanks for being with us on News and Views, and we appreciate your time.
I appreciate y'all.
Well, a lot of interesting information and numbers in the latest poll that you guys are doing. I guess before we get into some of the details, can you give us an idea overall about where the Senate race is in North Carolina?
The Senate race is still showing a slight favor for Senator Hagan, though it's really easy for folks to overestimate Senator Hagan's lead. This is very much anyone's race.
When you say a slight lead, does that mean that it's within the margin of error, which is something I think we all understand?
Most polls show are up 2 or 3 points. That is within the margin of error, particularly what we really care about, which is the margin of error of the difference, which is twice the size of a normal margin of error.
What does that mean?
So a margin of error of the difference tells you that even though a person may be up, say, 52-48, that actually, say you have a 3-point margin of error, is a lot closer to a 6-point margin of error if you wanted to say, are these scores actually different?
Tell us a little bit. I know you found that the Libertarian candidate, Sean Haugh, who's in the race and has, I've seen in various polls, getting a few points up to close to double digits. What role do you think he will play in the race in light of your polling?
In practicality, I think he'll play a pretty small role. What we're seeing right now is a lot of survey errors going on, showing him getting as much as he's getting in the polls. Last time the Libertarian candidate got about 2%. It's not clear to me at all what evidence that people have for Sean Haugh getting 10% like some show, except for survey error.
When you say survey error, how does that happen in surveys for people who aren't familiar with polling?
Well, people might not have made up their mind about who they're going to vote for, or they might not know much about the election at all. And so if you present them 3 choices and they're going to just randomly pick among those 3, they will pick some choices that they would not actually do in the ballot box.
Your latest release is fascinating about things that we really don't think about. For example, who's first on the ballot? Tell us about that.
Well, what we found is that, contrary to most views, ballot order matters, but not in the normal way. So normally we think of ballot order as a primacy effect. That means the first person on the ballot does better. What we found in our one online study was that we actually see recency effects, which is the second person on the ballot was doing better. So in this case, Senator Hagan is actually better off because she's second on the ballot. However, I'd throw some caution into that in that this was an online study. It was an online experiment. It's not necessarily the same thing as going into the ballot box and voting this way. Nonetheless, it does suggest that the often assumed role of being first on the ballot is not always the case. And in fact, there's some evidence that Al Gore did better in some elections by being second on the ballot.
It's also interesting when you showed people things called digital postcards about different messages. I want to ask you about the messages, but what is a digital postcard? How did that process work?
That was a neat thing, I think. The reason we showed the postcards, because it didn't make sense to ask people over and over again who you're going to vote for. So the postcards were a way to get people to evaluate the candidates without directly asking them in such a way that we wouldn't see variation. So essentially what we did there is we'd show a control image of a candidate in a certain context and then a treatment image of a candidate in another context. Two in particular were showing candidates with their partisan counterparts, be they Pat McCrory or President Obama.
And what did you find when you showed people Senator Hagan with President Obama and Speaker Tillis with Governor McCrory?
What we found in both cases is that people's favorability lowered for both candidates when they were shown with either partisan leader. So when Kay Hagan was shown with President Obama, people liked her less. When Tom Tillis was shown with Governor McCrory, people liked him less. Now, McCrory is bad for Tillis. Obama is terrible for Hagan. What we found was that the effect of Obama was about twice as strong as the negative effect of McCrory.
I guess in some ways, I guess you're getting at is what are some of the reasons people like Hagan or what are some of the reasons that people like Tillis? Give us an idea about some of the issues that each are strong in.
We did a number of policy-based experiments. We found Hagan leading in basically all that we tested, which was national defense, economy, immigration, women's health, education, health care, voter ID. However, Hagan's lead is not nearly as strong on immigration and on national defense. That might particularly be the case since Tillis has ramped up his game of criticizing her on national defense as of late.
The big news of this week in North Carolina was the decision by the Supreme Court not to take a decision by the Fourth Circuit that would overturn Virginia's ban on same-sex marriage. And it seems all but a foregone conclusion that marriage equality be legal in North Carolina. Can you give us a sense? Will that have an impact on this debate?
It could, though some of it will just be about Amendment 1 process and Hagan trying to portray Tillis in a negative light from that. We find pretty razor-thin margins in favor of gay marriage in North Carolina, but that is very much within the margin of error. North Carolina is very divided on gay marriage. Contrary to what some folks have said, it's not necessarily the will of the people of North Carolina that gay marriage be illegal. In fact, we show a slight majority supporting gay marriage.
That's obviously a significant difference from the when folks went to the ballot in May of 2012. Do you think that represents a shift in the feeling of the state, or just that was a, you can't compare because that was a primary election with a low turnout and so forth?
I think much of that is that the Amendment 1 vote was not necessarily representative of the general opinion of the population for a number of reasons, either the wording of the ballot and who showed up at the polls, but it's also because we have seen a fairly rapid shift in support of gay marriage, not just in North Carolina, but nationally as well. That said, there's still substantial opposition to gay marriage within the state.
Speaking as a pollster now taking a step back, what should people look for if there were only a few weeks out, really, from the election? There are now, it seems like every other day, we're seeing a national poll or a state poll or a poll from a partisan organization. How should folks interpret all these things? What are some things to look for?
The thing you really want to look for with polls is quality. There's been probably about 50 polls done in North Carolina. The things that I look for are, is this poll representative? And particularly the way that I know that is, do they have a big sample size, and did they call cell phones? It's not just enough to call landlines to get an accurate reflection. You also need to call cell phones.
That must present new challenges.
It presents challenges that we've been facing for a while. One, it's made the cost of polling go up dramatically, and it makes it harder to get an accurate sample. So we have to call here at Elon numbers about 5 times in order to ensure that our sample is accurate. And I can tell you from personal experience, it's quite painful to call a number back for the 5th time when they haven't answered 4 times before.
A lot of people will say that it's hard to tell who's a likely voter versus a registered voter, and that plays into account. Give us your idea about how that all plays out.
There is no perfect way for pollsters to determine who's a likely voter. There's about 10 different ways of doing it, and we will never know actually what's the right way to do it, just because one model of likely voter forecast in one election does not carry over to the other. We use what we think is the best method, which is that we collect a representative sample of the general population. We weight that sample to be reflective of the U.S. Census, and then we apply, after the data is collected, our likely voter screens. And so that involves a number of questions asking people, are you registered to vote? And then a whole battery of things that we think assesses their likelihood of showing up. So a question like, how certain are you that you will vote? How often would you say that you vote? Think back to elections held in Congress in 2010, that things keep up to keep you from voting. Have you ever voted in your precinct or election? So we ask a number of these questions. Then we assign an index to folks, and we make cuts on that index depending upon what we think the likely turnout will be.
And finally, much has been made about the gender gap and the battle over women's issues. Are you seeing that reflected in your polling?
We are. If Kay Hagan wins, it will be because she won more women, and she will win more women, but it's a question of how many more she will win. Tillis's biggest vulnerability and Hagan's biggest advantage right now is this gender gap. So we found close to a 20-point advantage if you look at women overall. When you look at single women, we found Hagan with a 47-point advantage. That's extreme. That's not something that Tillis can win with. So you saw in the previous debate that gender gap was the undercurrent of the issues they were discussing, be it fair pay or some sort of women's health-related issues. Tillis is not going to beat Hagan overall on women, but he needs to reduce the size of that gap. And in turn, Tillis is doing better than Hagan among men. However, the gap among men is much smaller than the gap among women.
Well, thank you very much for all this fascinating information. Thanks for doing your polling, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Up next, the latest poverty numbers and what policymakers should do about them. Stay with us.